Every word matters. One thing that definitely sets powerful communicators apart from others is that they are superb at generating a cooperative atmosphere. There are two components of building cooperation. First, a superb communicator must be aware of cooperation busters. There are definitely certain phrases and words that get in the way of building cooperation. Second, for maximum cooperation, you must know what words and phrases can help others decide that they want to work with you. In this segment, we're going to concentrate on eliminating words and phrases that can interfere with cooperation. Are you involved in sales? Are you involved in sales? What? You don't think you're in sales? Well, it may not be on your business card, but you sell your kids on the idea of cleaning their room, don't you? Don't you want to sell your value as an employee so you get promoted? We're all in sales. If you want to be good at sales, whether it's a formal job responsibility or simply seeking cooperation from others, you must be alert to the language patterns that can get in the way. Every word makes a difference, even a tiny little three-letter word. Suppose you're called in for a performance evaluation. You sit there talking to your boss. Your boss says, well, you've had a good 6 months, but... Well, the mere substitution of and for but reduces conflict by suggesting that two ideas can exist at the same time without one overruling the other. As soon as someone says, well, you've had a good 6 months, but you're thinking, oh, I haven't had a good 6 months. Of course, sometimes but is what you really mean. It's a very expensive house, but there's no view, the rooms are small, and the school district has a terrible reputation. Most of the time, though, we say but out of habit when and would be a much better choice. When I conduct training sessions for sales professionals, one subject that's often requested is objection handling. For example, what can I do when the customer says, but your price is too high? The very first step is to rephrase and repeat the customer's objection using and rather than but. One of my first sales training clients was Xerox. Their business products division sold copier paper, toner, and other supplies. Now, it's common for prospects to point out that they can buy paper much less expensively if it doesn't carry the Xerox brand. Now, new people instinctively say, it may seem like our paper is more expensive, but... As soon as a salesperson utters but, the prospect hears him trying to contradict her belief, and she stops listening. People don't like to be told that they're wrong. They immediately start to resist. So instead, I train the salespeople to agree with their prospects. Yes, our paper does seem more expensive, and the cost of making copies includes much more than the cost of the paper itself. Cheaper paper, for example, has a tendency to curl and jam in the machine. That means your expensive staff resources are pulled away from important projects to clear paper jams. The customer isn't being told she's wrong. She's simply being provided with more complete information on which to base her buying decisions. Replacing but with and creates a more cooperative atmosphere in sales situations, in negotiations, in family discussions, and any other time when you want to reduce conflict. Don't say but unless your true intent is to devalue a thought. What you can do right now is decide to make that substitution. Make a conscious decision to replace but with and as you talk to yourself and to others. Notice that your own thinking opens up as ideas coexist instead of conflict. Instead of saying, I'm getting the hang of my new job, but there are a few things I don't really understand. Say instead, I'm getting the hang of my new job, and there are a few things I don't really understand. Have you ever participated in a formal brainstorming session? They can be tremendously stimulating and loads of fun. It takes a certain set of verbal skills to fully tap into participants' latent creativity. Here's a hypothetical situation. During a brainstorming or feedback session with your sales team, it becomes clear that there are several sore points the group is concerned about. One member complains that supervisors in her section rings a bell when their incoming calls are backed up, and she finds it distracting. One suggests eliminating the bell. Here's one way you could respond. Well, I'm sorry you don't like hearing it, but it's the only way supervisors can let everyone know that it's time to get back to work. Without the bell, they'd have to constantly walk around gathering up their people. It's the only practical way to do it. Now, let's take a different approach. I can understand that that would be distracting. Let's find another way to let everyone know when the department is very busy. How about a series of lights up on the wall? If the bell hurts more than it helps, we'll experiment with other techniques. Market researchers often use focus groups to sample customers' feelings about a company's products and services. A dozen or so customers are invited to an informal discussion in a research company's facility and are observed through a one-way mirror. They're told up front that the company representatives will be watching them, and they're encouraged to say whatever they have on their minds. A moderator gently guides the discussion, carefully holding back any of his own opinions or feelings to avoid influencing the participants' views. Well, right after I completed my graduate studies, I was employed by a major advertising agency as an account executive. I handled several multi-million-dollar accounts, including Continental Airlines, McCulloch Chainsaws, and Vandekamp's Frozen Foods. Hearing what customers really thought about our ads and our clients' focus group sessions was often very revealing. It was kind of fun playing Peeping Tom behind that one-way mirror, too. Power talkers definitely have strong opinions and are not afraid to express them when appropriate. Convincing the other person that your point of view is right can sometimes help you win the battle, but lose the war. As a power talker, you want to make other people feel comfortable about expressing their ideas and encourage them to think creatively. Come up with new ideas. Only after evaluating the merits of various approaches can you determine the best course to follow. One of my clients is in the resort development business and has been very successful selling memberships in a national network of campgrounds. For them, as with most sales organizations, new sales prospects who are referred by existing customers have the very best potential for becoming satisfied new customers. The cost of finding them is low. Their conversion rate is high, and they tend to be happier with their purchases than other non-referral new customers. Referred prospects have already been influenced by the most powerful form of advertising, word-of-mouth publicity from a satisfied customer. I observed as my client gathered her employees together and presented them with the goal of brainstorming a dozen new ways to increase the flow of referrals. She didn't promote her own ideas, and she didn't criticize any of the suggestions. In less than 30 minutes, the team had come up with 15 excellent approaches. This manager was a conscientious user of power talking and an encouraging cheerleader rather than a domineering critic. Her role is to keep saying, "That's good. I like it. Let's do it. Wow, that can work. Come on, let's get some more ideas. Keep them coming. Who sees a way to connect these ideas?" And when someone else in the group poo-pooed an idea, she reminded them to keep an open mind. Encourage other people to cooperate by inviting their input and ideas. Welcome unusual suggestions rather than quashing them. Get all involved parties to throw their ideas out on the table so creative solutions can result. Here's what you can do right now. Whenever you seek others' input and suggestions, stimulate a free flow of ideas, no matter how crazy some might seem. Instead of saying, "I want to give everyone a chance to suggest one or two ideas, views on this topic," please keep your limited budget in mind. Say, "Let's get lots of ideas going. Don't worry about how much they may cost. We'll consider practicality later. For now, anything goes." You meet with an important customer because you've heard that he's been talking to one of your competitors. Fearing that you could be about to lose his business, you decide to find out if there's something he's unhappy about. Say out loud to yourself, John, you've been happy with our service, haven't you? Now say, John, you're a very important customer, and my aim is to constantly improve the way we serve you. What two or three areas would you like to see us improve upon? Big difference. Which question will encourage your customer to provide more candid feedback? Which will open a dialogue that leads toward a stronger relationship? I'll always remember staying at a certain hotel where I was doing a series of programs, and something unusual happened. The first time I stayed at this property, it happened to be a Thursday night, the last Thursday of the month, and after I finished my room service meal, my room phone rang and somebody named Deborah called saying, Mr. Walther, I'm calling to find out if everything was fine with your room service. That's unusual. Room service doesn't typically call me. And she asked, was it spiced right? Was it delivered on time? Was the person who brought it to you courteous? Yes, yes, yes. Next time I stayed at that same hotel, also the last Thursday of the month, she called again, asked the same questions. I started to kind of think, I wonder if she calls everybody. Well, the third time I stayed there, I found a little check-in slip at the front desk asking me to call my client, his name was Jerry Heimlicher, because he wanted to get together for dinner. I called and said, Jerry, I'd like to, but I'm expecting a call tonight. Okay, not really. I did, though, ask Deborah if I could have the opportunity to come see what she was doing. And that night, I learned three big lessons. First, if you like room service, I learned that you better not go down to the kitchen. That's where Deborah worked, and better if you just think of it on the tray with a little rope. You don't want to see what's going on down there. Second, I learned that people are really shocked when you go to them asking for feedback. But third, and this is the biggest lesson, I learned that the way you ask the question determines the quality and the quantity of the feedback that you're going to receive. Think of all the times that you've been served an overpriced, mediocre meal in a restaurant and commented to your companions that the service was poor to boot. Invariably, when the waiter asks, "Was everything satisfactory? You enjoyed your meal?" you smile and say, "Oh yes, thank you, it was fine." Why didn't you tell him the truth? Perhaps you could sense that he didn't really want to know the truth. He was asking a habitual question. Everything was fine, right? It was a hollow nicety. As I sat beside Deborah at that hotel and listened in on her calls that evening, I noticed that guests were all quite surprised to hear from her, yet very few offered any really helpful suggestions. Were they really 100% satisfied? Or did Deborah's questions themselves need improvement? Most calls went about like this. Hello, Mr. Heitzman. This is Deborah in room service. I'm calling to find out if you were satisfied with the soup and salad we delivered to your room earlier this evening. Was everything okay? The guests nearly always said something like this. Well, how nice of you to ask. Yes, everything was fine. Thanks for calling. After hearing several of these conversations, I asked Deborah, do you really just want to know if they were satisfied? Or are you looking for suggestions to help you improve? If you want more helpful feedback, let's ask a question that gets at the heart of what you're really after. Instead of asking if they are happy, let's ask guests, how can we make them happier? If we've already made them as happy as they could possibly be, they'll say so. Improve? You couldn't. So, on the very next call, Deborah changed her question. Good evening, Mr. Blackstone. This is Deborah calling from room service. I hope you enjoyed the prime rib dinner we delivered to you tonight. I'd like to find out what one aspect of your meal could have been a little nicer. Well, this took Mr. Blackbone by surprise, Mr. Blackstone. Oh my, it was very nice. Let's see, how could it have been a little better? Well, actually, the entree was just right, but I noticed that my dinner roll was rather hard. You could check up on the freshness. It's just a small thing. Everything else was fine. Well, Deborah zeroed in on the dinner rolls, and other guests also reported that theirs were a little stale. She contacted the bakery chef, arranged for a new batch, and continued with her calls to help her hotel set the pace for constantly improving its service. The best way to reinforce and improve any relationship is to stop and take stock. Whether it's with a customer, a colleague, a spouse, or a friend, find out exactly where you stand and make improvements wherever needed. When you want to improve any kind of relationship, you must take the time to ask for sincere, candid, complete feedback about how you can make things better. Frequently, feedback comes your way without even asking for it. It may be of a critical nature and may be couched in rather harsh terms. When you hear criticism, it's important to immediately let the other party know that you welcome the comments. That doesn't mean that you will necessarily agree with them or even find them valid. The important thing is to keep the communication channels open and show the other person that you respect his viewpoint. I recommend a two-step dialogue. First, say something like, "I'm really glad you're telling me this, and I do want to know how you feel. Thanks for being comfortable enough to tell me what's on your mind." And then follow up by asking for specifics. Don't dismiss the criticism after hearing the generalities. Instead, ask for more. "Please help me understand why you feel that way." Customer service mavens, employee productivity counselors, and family therapists constantly remind us to ask how we can improve our relationships. And that's good advice. And how you ask is almost as important as asking in the first place. Presume that you could do a better job, some area of your relationship, and then ask exactly what that area is. Don't ask if things are okay. Ask how you can make them better. I remember this by using the acronym SOAR, Rise Up, Get a Higher Perspective. S, solicit feedback. Don't wait for people to tell you. Go to them and ask. O, open the flow of communication. Coax those comments out of them. A, appreciate what you hear, especially if it's negative criticism. And then R, reward them for their behavior. Ideally, give them a call later to know what you have done. Show them that you're a partner. Here's what you can do right now. Make it a habit to ask at least one relationship-improving question every single day. Or, to put it succinctly, SOAR daily. Instead of saying, "Was everything satisfactory?" say, "How can I do a better job for you?" Suppose you call your dentist to schedule an appointment for your child on a Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday afternoons, those are early dismissal days at your child's school, so you really need to schedule on that day. Would you notice a difference if the person who took your call said, "A Wednesday afternoon? I'm afraid I can't schedule that until 3 Wednesdays from now." Compared with, "A Wednesday afternoon? Yes, I can schedule that 3 Wednesdays from now." One sure way to erect a blockade between yourself and the other person is to focus on what you can't do. One morning, while my wife and I were visiting a resort, we decided to have lunch a little early and headed down to the poolside terrace restaurant shortly before noon. The place was empty. No one else was seated, and a busboy was arranging silver on the tables. The hostess saw us waiting at the entryway and approached with a smile, saying, "We'll be open and ready to begin serving lunch in just a few minutes. I can seat you then." The first thing that ran through my mind was, "Hey, if you're going to be open in just a few minutes, why don't you just let us go in and sit down at one of those empty tables and wait?" I probably would have argued the point with her had she used the approach I'm more used to hearing. "The restaurant is closed now, and we won't be open and able to seat you for a while now. I can't seat you until then." What she did say carried the exact same meaning as the more common negative version. Her approach, though, informed us in a completely positive manner, stressing what she could do rather than what she couldn't. Instead of arguing or creating a conflict, We went to wait in the lounge and enjoy a drink. A few other couples had been greeted with her smile and positive statement, and they had also headed for the lounge to enjoy tropical drinks. That one hostess had used her positive talking, her power talking, to create a positive result instead of a negative one. The end result was that we were all happy to wait. Her busboys and other staff members were able to prepare for lunch without interference, and the bar did some extra business. For every can't statement, there's always a can. The negative can't version immediately erects a roadblock and creates a conflict. Compare the effect of, we won't be open this weekend and I'm afraid I can't get your order ready until Monday afternoon, with, we will be open again on Monday and I'll be glad to have your order ready that afternoon. The positive version is easier to understand, and it also projects a much more friendly, cooperative, helpful impression. Here's what you can do right now. Whenever you start telling someone what you can't do, change your focus and substitute a statement indicating what you can do. Instead of saying, I can't give you a river view room tonight, I'll have to put you in a city view for tonight and move you tomorrow, say, I can give you a city view room tonight and then have you moved into a river view room tomorrow. That way, you'll get to enjoy both views. Instead of saying, I can't answer that question for you myself, I'll have to go check with one of the customer service people and get back to you later, say, I can help you with that question by talking to our customer service department and getting a definite answer. I'll contact you this afternoon to let you know exactly where things stand. What time would you like me to call? Instead of saying, here's what I can't do, say, here's what I can do. One of your customers is very upset about a recent order. In a highly emotional state, he calls you and starts spouting off. Say out loud to yourself, well, Chris, it looks like you have a problem. What do you expect me to do about it? Now say this, Chris, it's clear that we have a challenge here. Let's work together and solve it. Hey, which approach is likely to move you toward a solution and create a cooperative atmosphere with Chris? Part of my training work involves showing organizations how they can do a much better job when dealing with upset customers. One of my assignments involved the elite team of a major cell phone company's representatives known as the Retention Group. Their job is to save customers who are so unhappy that they've threatened to cancel their cellular phone accounts. I met Chris B. on my first day of monitoring calls with my new client. Everyone in the customer service call center had either been yelled at by Chris B. or had heard animated stories about his tantrums, demands, and verbal abuse. And I'll tell you, in every call center that I go to work in, there's always somebody who knows the notorious customer who everybody, oh no, it's Chris B. Almost everyone hoped to avoid handling Chris's calls because he was totally unreasonable. And then along came Mary Hatcher. Her tone of voice, her demeanor, and her superb language skills reassure you that everything's going to be okay. The first time Chris was transferred to Mary, she got personal. Chris, I'm familiar with your situation, and I'm going to help you. Here's what I've been wondering. How could our service be so horrible, and yet you still keep doing business with us? Perhaps there's something else that you feel unhappy about. If you're having troubles in other areas, the last thing I want to do is contribute to your discomfort. He was taken by surprise. She had immediately cut through the usual business facade to uncover the root of the problem. Chris opened up and explained that his business life was a mess. He had problems in his relationships with employees. He wasn't getting along with his partner. No wonder. Chris was doing poorly on many fronts. His favorite outlet was his car phone, where he could call customer service and unleash a toll-free tirade at someone he'd never have to face. Chris was a specialist at erecting dividing barriers. His approach was, I'm the poor, mistreated customer. You're the big, rich company making money off of me, and you don't understand what it's like to be on my side of the table. What are you going to do to make up for my mistreatment?
Well, Mary is also a specialist at dissolving barriers. Her approach is to get on the customer's side. In fact, she describes her position as being a customer advocate. Her language is filled with impediment team-building phrases, impediment-erasing team-building phrases. We do have an uncomfortable situation here. Let's work together and solve this. Instead of permitting a verbal barrier to separate her from the customer, she dissolves it. Rather than trying to convince the customer that he's wrong, she validates his feelings and moves ahead. I understand why you feel that way. You have a right to expect superior service. Let's find out what's going on so that we can fix it. Mary's approach works. With her words alone, she showed Chris B. that there was no barrier dividing them. She aligned with him on his side, and he calmed down. Other customer service reps started reporting that he was actually sounding nicer when he called them. Mary succeeded in turning Chris B. around by deciding to dissolve the barrier that he imagined was dividing them. Most conflict situations involve imagined barriers. When people are working together on the same side of the table, there's no confrontation. The first challenge in reducing conflicts is to dissolve those barriers. You must show that your aim is to be a partner, not an adversary. Be careful to avoid pronouns that contribute to the me-you schism. Use we and us rather than you and I, because that shows that you view the relationship as a partnership. Be sure to point out any common ground that you share with your counterpart. Help the other person see that you truly are empathetic. Once you establish common ground with someone, they're much more likely to treat you as a problem-solving partner instead of an adversary. Peacemakers like Mary Hatcher are masters at using conflict-reducing language. The principles they use are easy to master, and you'll most likely have an opportunity to use them today. Use words that show your counterpart that you want to dissolve barriers and work together. Here's what you can do right now. When you're involved in a conflict, use your language to show that you're intent on working with, not against, the other person. Show that you and your counterpart are on the same side of the table. Instead of saying, "It's your problem, what do you expect me to do about it?" say, "We share this challenge, let's solve it together." Instead of saying, "Here's what you'll have to do," say, "Here's what we can do." Instead of saying, "I understand what you want, but I must adhere to my policies," say, "We share some important common goals. Let's see how we can work together." So power talkers are people who not only eliminate conflicting words that get people feeling like they're in a struggle, they're people who are specialists at building cooperation. And they do that by paying attention to every word and every phrase they use, because every word matters.